Welcome back to the Townships at 12. I'm your host, Maureen Dillon Teasdale, and you're listening to The Cube 88.9 FM here in the Townships. In part two of today's show, I will be interviewing Heather Pringle. Heather Pringle is a Canadian science journalist and author who specializes in writing about archaeology. She's based in Victoria, BC, and she has written four previous books and contributed several hundred articles about archaeology to magazines and journals as diverse as Science, National Geographic, Archaeology, New Scientist, Discover Geo, and Canadian Geographic. Her work has appeared in the Best American Science and Nature Writing and has earned numerous awards, including a Kavli Science Journalism Award from the American Association for the Advancement of Science. And today she will be talking about her latest book. It's called The North Women, Untold Stories from the Other Half of the Viking World. But first, we're going to hear the theme song from the Vikings TV series, Fever Ray, If I Had a Heart. Right after that, we'll hear the interview, so please stay tuned. For the Cube, and today I'm very pleased to welcome Heather Pringle to the Townships at 12. Now, Heather Pringle, she's a Canadian science journalist, and she's the author, an author who specializes in writing about archaeology. She's based in Victoria, BC, and you've done a lot of articles about archaeology to magazines and journals as diverse as Science, National Geographic, Archaeology, New Scientist, Discover Geo, and Canadian Geographic. And you have won several awards. One of them is from the American Association for the Advancement of Science. So welcome, Heather. It's definitely a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, it's a great pleasure to be here with you, Maureen. So thank you very much for taking an interest in this subject and inviting me onto your show.
Oh, you're welcome. Today we'll be talking about your latest book that just came out this year, 2024, and The North Women, Untold Stories from the Other Half of the Viking World. So it sounds fascinating, and I did buy the book, haven't read it yet, but looking forward to it. So, Heather, what inspired you to write this book, first of all?
Well, you know, I think for most people, and I would put myself in this category, until, you know, I started work on this book, but most people have this idea of the Vikings as being sort of, you know, big, brawny, bearded men with, you know, broad axes over their shoulders, swords clinking at their hips kind of thing, and a lot of vicious hand-to-hand combat. That sort of is our for many people, the mental image of a the Viking world. It's a world kind of steeped in testosterone. And the first time I realized that I was missing a big chunk of the picture was during a visit I made to Oslo, capital of Norway, and specifically the Viking Ship Museum. Now, in the Viking Ship Museum, there are three authentic Viking ships, and each of these ships was found in a burial mound in Norway. And archaeologists excavated the ships, and the ships were then towed to the Viking Ship Museum. Now, the star attraction there is a ship called the Oseberg Ship. And for years, the mound that concealed this ship, before it was excavated, was known as the King's Mound. Everyone kind of referred to it as the King's Mound. And it was, you know, clearly the burial place of somebody very important. It was a huge burial mound. And the assumption was it had to be the burial place of a king. So when archaeologists finally excavated this ship in the early 1900s, what they found was indeed a very large, beautiful Viking ship. It would have seated about a crew of 30. But inside the ship, there were many treasures. There were things like rich tapestries that would have hung in a Viking great hall next to a powerful ruler. And there were, you know, very fine pieces of fragments of very costly clothing, including clothing made of trimmed with silk from probably from China. Anyway, there were a lot of treasures in this ship. And there were the bodies of two individuals. So the assumption was, oh, you know, it'd probably be, you know, a Viking king and maybe his loyal servant, something like that. That was the most likely scenario. But when researchers really started to examine the human remains from that ship, what they discovered was it was the burial, the ship, and it's called the Oseberg ship. It was the burial place of two women. Now, this is really significant because the Oseberg ship burial is the most lavish Viking grave known to archaeologists today. And it's not the grave of a man, it's the grave of two women. And that kind of blew my mind because, you know, I have this image of the Vikings as being kind of a very male-dominated society. And all of a sudden, here it was that in this very, very lavish grave in Oseberg in Norway, we have the grave of two women. So that really started, that really fired up a lot of interest on my part. And it kind of launched a kind of personal quest to learn more about Viking women. So that was sort of the origin story of the book, Maureen.
Okay, that's fascinating, really. Why do you think that Viking women have been overlooked for centuries and the role early archaeologists played in perpetuating this bias?
Well, I think there's a couple of reasons for it. One of the big reasons, I think, is that the Vikings were masters of the spoken word, not so much the written word. Their storytellers told stories which we call the sagas today, and these stories were handed down through generations. The Vikings also did have a writing system, but it was a system in which messages were basically scratched onto hard surfaces like stone or carved into wood, and they were short messages. If you think of this, a little bit like the Vikings were the Vikings specialized in writing tweets, very short messages. They were not specialists in writing long histories of their age and their time. So the messages that they left us about their societies and the people in their societies were extremely short. And so we don't have, you know, the Vikings to tell us about powerful women in their society. And the people who were contemporaries of the Vikings in Europe were literate. They were people who were writing histories and chronicles of the time, longer pieces of nonfiction, if you like. But the writers of these chronicles were men, were largely men. I won't say exclusively men, they were largely men, and they were writing for other men, and they were interested in the world of men. They weren't interested in so much in Viking women. So, you know, we have very few written sources that really give us a good picture of, you know, what Viking women were doing at the time. And so, as a result, during the 19th century and the 20th century, archaeologists had this idea, and not just archaeologists, but other scholars, had this idea that Viking women were rather like 1950s housewives. They were, you know, they cared for their children, they were homemakers, they cooked, they cleaned, all those roles that are very, very important, and I don't want to minimize the importance of those roles. Extremely important. But archaeologists were not really looking at the possibility that women may have played other roles. And so what has happened in more recent years, is that women have entered the field of archaeology in Scandinavia, in increasingly large numbers. I mean, I remember when I first started writing about archaeology, and that was almost 40 years ago, I would go to the conferences and it'd be almost entirely men, male archaeologists there, very few female archaeologists. And of course, today it's entirely different. I mean, we see a lot of female archaeologists. So as females start entering the field of archaeology in Scandinavia, they start asking questions about the Viking Age. You know, what were women doing at this time? They started wanting to shed light on these issues. And so increasingly what happened is archaeologists were excavating burials, for example, burials of women. And they were really paying a lot more attention to females, the female half of the Viking world. And so what we have today is a body of archaeological evidence that is really helping us dig deeper into, you know, what was actually going on. And so, you know, we do have the tweets, as I called them, you know, the shorter Viking messages. We have some descriptions provided by other European writers at the time of the Viking Age. And we can, you know, if by combining a number of things, including the sagas, the stories that were written down after the Viking Age ended, and they're written down by often by Christian monks and Christian scholars, by combining all this varied evidence together, we are now starting to get a much fuller picture of what Viking women were doing. And what we are learning is they were queens, they were power brokers, they were landowners. Some of the women owned large estates, explorers, settlers, warriors, even military commanders, and some were sorceresses and magic workers. For example, the two women buried in the Oseberg ship were at least one of them appears to have been a magic worker, a sorceress, based on evidence that archaeologists have reanalyzed from the Oseberg ship. So women played quite a variety of roles in the Viking world, and these are now starting to come to light.
That's really fascinating. What most surprising and interesting things did you find out in your research?
Well, there were so many. It's a little hard to really focus on some of them. But one of the things that really intrigued me personally was how important women were to the success of the very famous, you know, Viking raiding parties and Viking armies. Women were absolutely critically important to these endeavors because, let me give you one example. Much research now shows us that very highly skilled female artisans played a huge part in actually equipping the Viking ships, the Viking fleets, you know, filled with warriors that were, you know, sailing to various parts of the, you know, distant parts of the Viking world, you know, to what is now England and, you know, Ireland and so on, but also So that being in the West, but also in the East as well, and so places in what is now Russia and so on. So anyway, women played a huge part in equipping these Viking ships. And the way in which they did that was through their skills as weavers. They made all the sailcloth. They seem to have made all the sailcloth that was necessary for the Viking ships. And just to give you an idea of how much sailcloth was required, one ship, let's say a fairly large warship, a Viking warship, the sail on that one ship would have been roughly the size of 20 king-size beds all pushed together, you know, an area of equivalent to 20 king-size beds. And so women weavers were weaving all the sailcloth, and this was a, you know, it's a very kind of sophisticated kind of cloth. It has to, you know, it has to have certain attributes that make, you know, that allow the wind to, you know, to build the sails, but not so full that the sails are so full of wind that they rip apart the sails. I mean, there's a lot of very fine balancing act that has to be done. In other words, sailcloth is really quite a particular piece of textile. And in order to make just one sail, about 10,200 hours of a woman's work or a team of women would go into making just one sail. And the way we know that, in case your listeners are wondering, how the heck does she know that? Well, at the Viking Ship Museum in Denmark, this is a different one than the Viking Ship Museum I was talking about in Oslo, but in Denmark, there's another museum called that, and in which they make replicas of authentic Viking ship, and they also were studying the sailcloth as well. So they found weavers in Scandinavia who knew the traditional ways of weaving and who were able to replicate the sailcloth that would have been used on a Viking vessel. And so they didn't make, in some cases they made the entire sail. In some cases, these women, modern women weavers made the modern sail. But in other cases, they made smaller pieces of cloth because 10,239 hours of work going into one large sail, that's an awful lot of time for a team of modern women today. So anyway, the way we know this, the amount of labor that goes into these sails is because of these replication experiments. Myself, I think that's kind of mind-boggling that women were so essential to the creation of the raiding ships and the raiding parties and so on.
It's just fascinating. I don't think many modern women could weave at all, even probably with you know, lessons. I don't know.
No, you're right, Maureen. They had to really hunt for some women in Scandinavia who had made a point of trying to preserve the old ways. So it's fascinating. It's really fascinating.
It is fascinating. Were a lot of them taken as slaves too?
Yeah, and that's the darker side. And I certainly don't want to ignore that. In fact, I have a chapter in the book about the capture of women both abroad. So abroad meaning in the United Kingdom, let's say, for example, the Viking raiding parties abroad. And also, in Scandinavia as well, there were women who were taken as slaves in Scandinavia as well. And they were sexually abused and physically abused. And it was a miserable life for, the women who were captured or forced into slavery, let's say. So this is a very dark chapter in Viking history, and as I say, I have written a chapter about that.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people whose ancestry go back to Ireland around there do have some kind of Scandinavian genetics in their DNA.
Oh, I think so, absolutely. And as a matter of fact, I'm one of those people because my ancestry is in part Irish, and I've had my DNA tested, and I do have some DNA, genetic profile that seems to match with, Scandinavian, with a Scandinavian heritage. It's not big, but it's certainly present in my own genetic ancestry.
So that's interesting to me, too. What do you hope that people take away from your book after they read it?
Well, I guess my big hope would be, I really think that if we want to understand the Vikings and really get a sense of who they were, instead of just making assumptions, we need to look at what both Viking men and Viking women were doing at the time. We can't just, make these assumptions, women were housewives and caregivers and raising the children and so on. We can't just say that all Viking women were doing that. We need to really look at this question carefully. And one way of doing that is by really examining the burial evidence. That's one way of doing it. So when archaeologists excavate the burials of Viking women, really examining that, what do the objects found in the grave suggest about the lives of the women? I mean, only very recently, for example, evidence was found of a Viking military commander, or certainly a Viking female warrior. We need to keep our minds open. We can't just let assumptions rule, kind of thing. So I think that's the main message I would like people to take away.
Definitely seeing that a lot of the Viking women were strong, dominant women.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. And within the family, too. I mean, again, I don't want to minimize the importance of strong women in Viking households and in terms of, offering advice to their husbands and occasionally when their husbands were away, because, during the Viking Age, a lot of men were involved in raiding parties, overseas trading expeditions, and so on. And so women were running, in part, women were running farms during this age. So, again, we need to keep our minds open. We can't just assume that we know what, Viking women were likely doing. We need to really ask questions and look for evidence.
Anything else you'd like to add before we go, Heather?
Well, I think that, history is probably often written in this very early period. We get historical accounts that were written largely by male writers during this very early period. I mean, the Viking Age began around 750 AD, roughly, and extended right up until roughly the end of the 11th century. So, during this time, in terms of European writers, a lot of the written accounts that we have from this period were written by men. And we have to be mindful of that. We can't just say, they're not mentioning much about women, so women weren't doing anything interesting. We can't make those assumptions.
Mm-hmm. Definitely very well said. Heather Pringle, she is a Canadian science journalist and author who specializes in writing about archaeology. And today we were discussing her latest book, The North Women, Untold Stories from the Other Half of the Viking World. Thank you so much, Heather, and all the best on the book.
Thank you so much, Maureen. Much appreciated.
Next up, we have some health news here on the Townships at 12. Now, Vikings commonly used herbs such as yarrow, plantain, and mugwort for medicinal purposes. Yarrow was used for wound healing, plantain for its antibacterial properties, and mugwort for digestive issues. They also utilized nettles, dandelion, and willow bark for their various health benefits. And that's keeping with our Viking theme here on part 2 of the Townships at 12 for today. I'd like to thank my guest today, Benjamin Tongay from Jebby Suicide, for giving us all the information about the organization in the first part of today's show, and Heather Pringle, Canadian science journalist and author, talking about her latest book, The North Women, Untold Stories from the Other Half of the Viking World. Definitely a great book. I'm looking forward to reading my copy. And we'll close today's show with a song from Canadian artist Melissa Manchester. The song is called My Christmas Song for You. Thanks everybody for listening and have a great day.
Silver bells ring out from every street. Golden dreams for children fast asleep. flip through every catalog I own. I walk past every holiday window, but there's nothing in this world. I've searched through, chose the way I feel, and I do. So here's a Christmas song for you. I'll be singing my Christmas song for you. You never find this gift in any store. It's nothing like you ever heard before. An angel must have wanted it this way to guide me to this Christmas serenade. 'Cause there's nothing in this world I've searched through that shows the way I feel, and I do. So here's a Christmas song for you.